longtime Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Rudd. It's a Wednesday, so never during the week are you further away from the weekend than today.
What a great way of looking at it.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're bringing in some light into this very dark day. Nick Kiprio sticking around.
Well, look at this. Look at who's beside us here. Yeah. The fisherman with a tan. All the energy is beside me with Mr. Brent.
Yeah, see, isn't that true?
Yes. Now you're reminding me, Kip, that you set the over-under at a fish and a half, I think, for his fishing trip, fish caught, and I think it was well over.
I saw the pictures.
It was well over, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was well over.
He was not shy sharing pictures.
He doubted you.
Well, it should never doubt me when it comes to fishing. No, you can doubt everything else. Just don't doubt that.
All right. How's it going?
We're good. Yeah, all good. Daily grind, Monday through Friday for the first time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Like, it's honest work. Like, it's quite, you've avoided it successfully for a long
eventually,
time.
Eventually, I have this phobia. I always had this dream, this recurring dream that I'm late for the game and I cannot tie up my skates. No matter how hard I try, they will not. And the game's going on and I'm still tying skates up. Now in the broadcasting world, I've run out of things to talk about.
Has that happened yet?
Not with Justin Bourne.
No. Just now.
Yeah. You got 2 hours of things to talk about, not 2.5 hours. All right. So I'll get us on track then.
Please.
Revenge game for Jack Campbell. I can't imagine a scenario where somebody departed a franchise in the way that Jack Campbell did because he was traded, and understandably, you know, he was not the future of that franchise, right? They had a young kid that they paid $5 million a year, but he was traded out of town and feels no animosity towards that franchise whatsoever. Like, he doesn't feel any animosity towards anybody on planet Earth, though, I guess is the caveat.
He is the nicest guy you'll ever meet, so I don't think he's ever felt animosity in his life. That's the one emotion I think missing from him. But as an athlete, I think it's only natural that he's going to want to go in there. And who's even there from his days that moved him, traded him, mm-hmm. didn't believe in him? I don't know what, but there's always a motivation for athletes coming from another organization to go back and show once again that you made a mistake. You're
money on the board.
All of it. It'll be a great night for him to remember. And hopefully he's on the right side of it, but also going up against Jonathan Quick, because of course that was the guy that you were supposed to earn the torch from.
Yeah.
And that obviously didn't happen. And when you look at Jonathan Quick today, the numbers are pretty good, still having a huge impact on that team. And goalies are a little different. Some of them, as Jack has proven, can really start to mature in their 30s and maybe hit a certain level that can carry them to 34, 35, 36 and feels like they're still on top of their game. And that's where I think Quick is right now. We thought Quick was done 2 years ago in LA, 3 years ago, and finding ways to still prove that there's no one better than me.
Jack Campbell's, he's going to be kind of the example, like the, for anybody, you know, the example of how patience can pay off, though, isn't he? Like, that people are going to use him now, say, you know, especially with goalies. Like, there was a time, you know, back in the midst of the distant past when the notion of a goalie not maturing until he was in his late 20s wasn't that surprising, right? Like, number one, they didn't turn over that quick. Guys kept the job for a long time, but the idea of investing a first round pick in a guy and then waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting, that's not, you know, not many general managers willing to do that in this world.
I think Stephen, if you really look at where goaltending's gone in the last 4 or 5 years, and now we just carry Price and Montreal is a prime example of that, is that even as good as Carey Price is, it's still hard to now have teams truly invest money and term in that position, no matter who you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at Carey Price, of course, he had an incredible run last year and almost single-handedly took them to a Stanley Cup final. And yet prior to that, there was a few years where people were screaming, get rid of him, the contract's killing us. I just don't know in terms of how you definitively you know, still lock in guys long term in that position, because at any moment it can kind of go south on you. And
well, especially when you're 30, right? Like, he is 30, right? He's establishing himself as a true number one for the first time, but it's coming at a time where people realize you can't pay the 30-year-old $10 million.
Well,
not that he would ever earn that.
But he wants five times five.
But that's
a big commitment too.
But I think it's a great point, Nick. The idea that that goaltending is a position where you kind of not quite mix and match, but you say, okay, if we get 2 years out of this guy, that's great. But we're not going to assume that 2 years turns into 6 years.
I'd sooner overpay for short term.
For short term, yeah.
Than a fair market number at 2 years or 3 years longer than it should have been, and it's a dicey position to commit to now in today's world in the National Hockey League. And you know, we're still now racking our brains on Team Canada and their goaltenders, and you're like Binnington, Carter Hart, and not that they're not talented guys, but if their game went south tomorrow, how many people would truly be surprised?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's hard to think this way considering that Jack Campbell's been the best goaltender since he arrived in Toronto, and he's been the best goaltender this season, and he's had the biggest workload of any goaltender in the National Hockey League. But Peter Mrazek's returning to practice, and he's the guy that has the longer-term contract. Understand, like, that's movable, I suppose, if he returns to health and Jack Campbell is your guy and you extend him. But, like, the possibility of Peter Mrazek being the opening day starter next season, maybe not out of the realm of possibility.
Well, just think about what the sales job was to get Mrazek to sign here at 3.8 for 3 years.
Yeah.
We've got a young kid. We like him, but unproven. You've come in, you know, you're making almost $4 million a year. You've played in the playoffs before. We like your body of work. It's going to be like a 1-1A. You guys will share the net. Whoever gets hot will claim its spot at the right time in the playoffs. But he's not having that feeling now coming off of a second stint with an injury.
Oh, he's the backup now.
Yeah, he is.
But it's not an easy contract just because he's healthy. It'll be an easier contract to trade if he can come in and play and show that he's good and that it's worthy of us to trade for you. He needs to play. And I'm not sure once every four games now will be good enough for teams to pick up a $3.8 million contract for two more years. This one's going to be a tough one for the Leafs here if Jack continues to hold his spot and play like he is a 55-game starter.
That's a big ask, though, man. I'm not far be it for me to deny the magic of Jack Campbell. Like, maybe he will. Maybe he'll play 55, 60 games and play like this. But
Jack wants his net. And I, for a guy that now the Leafs are trying to sign, going back to alternate, one or 1A,
don't you lose?
Not going to fly with Jack Campbell at this point.
It's not going to fly with his teammates. How could you be in that locker room the way you've played? You're second place in this division. He's on pace to win the Vezina, and all of a sudden, this guy who's not been able to stay healthy for you might be a good. Like, the idea of them sharing the net at the beginning of the season was reasonable.
Right now for Kyle Dubas.
Like, you could lose this team, right, if you start doing the thing that you planned on doing at the beginning of the season because Jack Campbell's played so well.
It's still you got to manage it. And you still have a guy that has never done it before and has had a history of getting hurt. So you got to be wary of that. You got to work with him. You got to talk to him, understand where the spots are, where they want to give him a break, but all he wants right now is to be treated like the number one goalie that he is, which would include the majority of starts.
Yeah, but wouldn't be shocked if he had a wobble between now and the end of the season, would you?
No, not a wobble, but I'd be surprised if it fell off significantly.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's going to fall off a cliff. No, but just at a point where you thought
a bad week.
Yeah, like it's just everybody can have a bad week, right? Mm-hmm. But I just think there's probably a point where Mrazek's going to they're going to need him. Mm-hmm. You know, we can debate what the number is at this stage, but they're going to need him at some point, aren't they?
The season's still too early
Yeah.
for us to now definitively say that Jack Campbell will end up with 62 starts.
Well, and you got to protect his health as well. Like, they're talking about Joseph Woll playing not necessarily just on back-to-backs before Peter Mrazek's back and healthy. I mean, yeah, Jack Campbell at this rate is going to play his career high in games by the end of December. Does help, though, when you play like the mid-90s Devils, which I guess the Leafs are playing like, right? Like, that's it. Win every game 2-1, 1-0.
Who's playing the role of Bobby Hajek? That's what I want to know.
This is not the high-flying offensive team that we expected. No. They've been much better on the power play, which is helping. They've had to be.
Yeah.
Because they can't score 5-on-5. What's going on?
Yeah, I don't. I'm not even sure I'm seeing a lot of creativity 5-on-5, which is a bit of a concern. I talked to Justin Bourne about this a little bit, but when you typically see your centermen, your first two centermen, they're not shoot first type of guys. Mm-hmm. And we know Matthews is for sure, but Tavares likes to get pucks to the net as well. And I think they're guys that probably have to think less about shooting. I think it's more predictable than ever that the teams know that what Matthews wants to do, and they may be cheating a little bit off of it.
He's also hit 5 posts this season.
You know, but typically when you see shots on goal, the leaders, they're wingers. And there's, I think if you look at the first 12 leaders in shots on goal, there's only 3 centermen, and 2 of them are Leafs and Connor McDavid. Mm-hmm. And the rest of them are wingers. And I just think that they've got to find ways to be a threat, setting more people up. And maybe less shots on goal. That, to me, would be a good start 5-on-5 for them.
Well, that's you just blew the analytic community's brains. Fewer shots on goal.
Yes.
You know, that doesn't result in more Corsi. Fewer Corsi. Less expected goals, Nick, fewer shots on goal.
I'm expecting more goals because of it.
Yeah, you might be right. But I would say eventually they're going to be a better scoring team than this. And I would say if you had to choose, okay, and you can disagree with this, but if you had to choose at the beginning of this season, would you rather be this high-flying, explosive offensive team, or would you be this 100% defensive team to win games like they've had and to expect the offense to catch up to the defense? You would rather have this, right?
I agree with you there, that you win from the net out. Mm-hmm. And you're right. They are going to score. They are talented guys, and they have been snake-bitten, you're still predominantly relying on 4 players. And I don't think all of a sudden we're going to see the bottom half of the team kind of light up for, you know, the next 20-goal scorer.
Kampf and Cash have been pretty good.
They've been great. But they're not great scorers. Kampf's never historically been a guy that can find a way to score 15 goals. But certainly from the net on out, the checking that you're talking about, the consistency, limiting your odd man rushes, good third man, that's really coming into its own. And ultimately, Jack Campbell has made not only the saves that he's supposed to make, but he's making spectacular ones at a well. It is defensively, it's a perfect storm right there for them in all facets of the game.
We were talking about this before you got on air, and just a little change of subject here, but the NHLPA, around the time of the, you know, when the Kyle Beach thing was going down, obviously the NHL, Don Feard's leadership, they were not exactly covered in glory in the way they handled this. And we were talking about, there was a meeting, right? There was a meeting of team reps, and there was a sense that maybe that was going to be the end of Don Feard right there. He's been around a long time. He's been very successful in some ways. You want to measure his performance in the job. But it kind of felt like maybe this is a natural end anyway, but maybe because of the way they handle this, it's also the end. But then it went quiet.
Yeah.
What are you hearing?
Well, what I'm hearing is that obviously the report out of Chicago put Donald Fehr and the NHLPA right in a pretty big light. And, you know, Kyle was not scared to point the direction at Donald Fehr and his lack of ability to help. Mm-hmm. We know that the players want it more investigated. They've hired a firm to go out there and do that. And now we hear that, you know, when it comes to having Kyle sit down with the NHLPA and the investigation, he doesn't want to go on record with it, which makes it very difficult to get to the bottom of it, because at the end of the day, it's we're only talking about maybe six or eight people.
Yeah.
In any type of investigation, it's not. But you need, I think you need Kyle to really come in and answer some questions here. So yeah,
I can't imagine that there's without him that you can do anything.
What kind of investigation is there without him?
Yeah.
So I don't think that it's going to go anywhere when it's all said and done, which means that we've got a whole lot more of, I can't really remember. I'm not sure. At the end of the day, which brings me back to your question with Donald Fehr and the fact that he's 73 years old. And anytime anyone's come up with what's the exit strategy here?
Succession plan, right?
What is it? And nobody really has one, in the sense is that to today that he doesn't really want to go anywhere.
Well,
that he's happy to stay on board, and not sure whether, you know, everybody's on board with that, whether it's the players or people in the office, or they're going, maybe this is the right time now to work on a contingency plan and maybe allow you to kind of gracefully leave.
Yeah, which has never happened in the history of the PA.
Yeah, you're right.
Not there's not like, let's go through the list. None of those guys, none of them left by of their own volition.
But there is a window for Don, and it appears that he doesn't want the window right now.
Well, is this the window, though? I mean, if he departs now under this cloud of suspicion, and I suppose maybe it's different if they just close the investigation without the testimony from Kyle Beach. But I mean, without saying definitively one way or the other, there will be that cloud around Donald Fehr if he resigns now.
But you could get him out without the long knives.
So. There's not enough to really definitively say that he did something wrong. So you can certainly hang it, Ben, more on the fact that he's 73 years old. Uncle.
No, I'm like, surprised that he wouldn't just let go.
And you came in under trying times.
Yeah.
It was a mess back then. You wanted to come in and help them kind of straighten it out, and you ended up hanging out a lot longer. Maybe the players loved you. Maybe you loved the players. But it needs a fresh coat of paint in the worst way. And the best way that can happen is if they set up a search committee, they do it properly, they interview people, and Don gracefully exits. But I don't get the sense that's coming anytime soon.
Oh, that's surprising. Nick, thanks for sticking around, man.
Hey, my pleasure, guys.
Thanks, bud.
Enjoy the game tonight.
All right, you too. Nick Kyprios, Real Kipper and Born. More of the Fan Drive Time when we continue. Ben Annis, Stephen Braun, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Time Sports and 590 The Fan, Ben Annis and Stephen Brunt. And let's just check my old trusty rundown here. Oh, I'm supposed to say I was right.
Oh, that? What were you right about, Ben?
Well, it's subjective, so maybe I wasn't right.
No, right is not subjective. Right is black and white. Right is objective. You are either right or you are wrong.
Well, I mean, the numbers would suggest that I was right, okay?
No, make your case.
All right, so tell me I'm wrong. Stephen Matz.
Yes.
4-year, $44 million deal with the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes.
I recall a recent free agency battle between the Blue Jays and the St. Louis Cardinals that went the Cardinals' way and didn't work out so well for them.
The Brett Cecil, is that the one you're thinking of?
Yeah, there's a couple. But
that was one. That didn't work out that great, did it?
No, he just recently retired, too.
He did, yes.
God. Now you got me sidetracked.
Sorry, I'm just trying to. I will get out of the way and allow you to have your moment of glory. Go ahead.
You don't have to, but yeah.
No, I think it's the only right. Go ahead. I lean back. Go ahead.
I said that if I were the Blue Jays, I would qualify Steven Matz at $18.4 million. And the only caveat that I wouldn't have done that, if I figured I could get him signed to a multi-year deal for more than that, but the AAV of less than that. But I wanted Steven Matz to return either on a one-year deal worth $18.4 million or a two-year deal worth $25 million or whatever. I don't want him on a four-year, $44 million.
No.
So I want to be clear about that.
Yeah.
That's too much.
Yes.
Steven Matz is a fine pitcher. He pitched to an ERA under four in the American League East. And yes, Chris Black, the final 12 opponents were not the best teams in the American League. They're understood.
A bunch of palookas. Yeah, that's correct.
Understood. And he had worse numbers against sub-500 teams than he did above 500 teams. But I would argue that I think everybody in baseball would share those numbers.
I think we would all agree that Steven Matz is okay.
Yeah, that's what. So right? What you're going to get every fifth day is like, you know,
he's okay.
Okay,
not great.
Yeah, sometimes he'll go five and give up four, which won't be so great. And sometimes he'll go three and give up five, which will be even worse. But sometimes he'll go six, scoreless.
And he didn't melt down the way he did with the Mets.
Right.
Like that was the thing. He used to melt down. He didn't melt down.
Yeah.
And so he's okay.
And he's probably not in your playoff rotation. But guess what? You need some Steven Matzes throughout the course of a year.
Yeah, you do.
All right. They didn't qualify him. So he is untethered, goes into free agency with no draft pick attached to him, and there's like reports of eight teams in on him. The market for Steven Matz through the roof. And the Blue Jays were involved in the conversation around Steven Matz in a multi-year deal and apparently would go as far as three, but not four, like the St. Louis Cardinals. They should have qualified him because either one, they get him for the one-year $18.4 million deal and look around the remaining free agent pitchers and how many of those guys you're really all that interested in or believe that are legitimate possibilities to sign in Toronto. And it's not exactly a who's who of helpful starting pitchers. So either he accepts the one-year deal, overpriced, no doubt. He's not, although this year he did produce at a level that's higher that's worth more than $18.4 million.
Yes.
Or what I think would have been the more likely scenario, considering what his market was, get a draft pick compensation. Because I know that also tempers the market a little bit.
Yeah, he wouldn't have got four times 11 if there'd been a draft pick attached to him.
Well, I would have. I think he gets, if the Cardinals wanted to go 4 years on him, like what's one draft pick at the end of the first round? Okay, so four years and 35.
It does seem to, I think it does work as a bit of an anchor. So no, let's say, but let's say he wouldn't have got quite what he got if there had been a draft pick attached.
Steve Cohen, he said those first round picks have a value of about $7 million. So let's maybe lob $7 million off.
Steve Cohen's word for it. Yes.
Yeah. We'll talk about him in a second.
Yeah, yes, we will. I guess it's an interesting one. Like there's obviously a calculation. Like a bit of brinksmanship there, right? Where you think, okay, number one, could we live with him at $18 million for 1 year? And I would think the Jays on that were kind of going, I'm not so sure. Like one, I'm guess they kind of teetered back and forth on whether Steven Matz 1 year at $18 million. Look, because again, remember that we think we know that they were willing to pay Noah Syndergaard $25 million for a year, right? They were probably willing to pay Justin Verlander $25 million for a year. Now, Steven Matz is not as good as Justin Verlander. It's less risky than those two guys, but the ceiling's not even close, I don't think, right?
I'll let you continue, but what are the odds you think that Noah Syndergaard is going to have a season this year like Steven Matz had a season ago? Like, if you got that Steven Matz season out of Noah Syndergaard, I think it's like you're not all that disappointed.
Yeah, it wouldn't look like that. I think Noah Syndergaard is either going to be, you know, spectacular or hurt.
You're probably right.
Right? Like, I don't think there's anything. Yes. I don't think there's anywhere where he looks like a good number three.
Yeah.
Right? He's either going to be on the disabled list or he's going to be unreal. So, and that's a gamble too, obviously. But yeah, no, I think that must have been the discussion in the brain trust, which is, okay, can we live with him for, you know, and what's going to happen if we don't? My guess is, I use the auction analogy all the time, right? But, you know, how bad you want him, right? And if you really, you know, if you said, boy, yeah, we want to start the season with Steven Matz, you probably give him the qualifying offer. And if he turns it down, then you allow the market to play itself out. It's your draft pick. You know, so it's less of a risk for you if you want it. Then you can still go. You can still talk to him.
Yeah.
Right? So the decision you have made is we don't want him at 18.
Yes.
And, you know, look, you may be right. Like, you're right in the short term. We'll see how this plays out because, like, all off seasons come back to me when we get to opening day and what's the roster look like.
Well, okay, so what is the one-year deal that you'd be comfortable signing Steven Matz to? Because it's more than $11 million, and you were apparently, let's say the
Blue Jays assuming he would have taken it, right? Like, and maybe he would have. Like, do you think he takes you 1 year at 18? Maybe. I don't know.
The thing that's different about the rules, not like he can talk to other teams. He can have the qualifying offer in his back pocket,
yes,
knowing that that's a nice soft pillow to land on. And he can talk to other teams. He can talk to the St. Louis Cardinals, who said, you know what, if we didn't have this draft pick, we would have given you 444, but now it's, I don't know, 440 or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the draft pick being that detrimental to his value. If the St. Louis Cardinals, like a half decade is what they laid out for Steven Matz. They were in on Steven Matz. There was a bidding war for Steven Matz. And on a one-year deal, we talk about how there's no bad one-year deals, although it does, if you're giving $18.4 million to Steven Matz for 1 year, it's presumably some money,
yeah,
maybe $8 million that you can't spend elsewhere that you might, and that could go a long way. Maybe not. Maybe that's a nice reliever at the back of your bullpen for $8 million. You can do really well with $8 million there. But I bet you the Blue Jays would have done, what, $13 million on a one-year deal? Like, we're talking about $5 million,
yeah,
and you would have at least, and you maybe you don't end up with him. Maybe you just end up with a draft pick.
Which would be nice, too.
Yeah, which would be fine, too. Thing.
Yeah, no, it's look, I say it's a calculated risk.
Say I was right.
Like, I just can't get excited about Steven Matz in any capacity here. But
that's the correct response.
But you're right. No, like you're right.
Twice you said it.
Well, I've never denied you're occasionally right. I think I've been fair about that. No, yeah. It makes sense. Like I wouldn't have signed Steven Matz to a 4 year deal ever.
No.
And God love St. Louis, and maybe it'll pan out. Mm-hmm. He's okay. Yeah. But you're right. Like at $18 million, you know, maybe that the minimal risk on that in terms of, you know, what the difference between the $18 million and what you would rather pay him, you know, you know what kind of role he would fulfill. He's going to be your fourth guy. Yeah. But let's see where this ends.
Because
you're right about, you know, reapportioning that money, I guess.
Like, yeah. Well,
it's not going to get you a ton, but it could get you something.
Blue Jays, we talked to Ross Atkins about this, looking for two starters at least.
Yeah.
At least.
But one of those guys is just a guy.
Sure. Maybe. Right?
Yes.
But yeah, they got to get two. So maybe the guy is just, you know, some bottom of the barrel guy in free agency and one's via trade.
I think, you know, maybe you look for a reclamation project, right? Maybe you look for a Pete Walker special, right? That's maybe one of the guys you sign. And I think they want somebody who can fit into the middle of their rotation, you know, somewhere right between Alec Manoah and or Ryu and Ross Stripling.
Yeah.
Or whoever, you know, Nate Pearson or Trent Thornton or, you know, whoever that's going to be, right? They're going to use over under the number starters they go through this year. If they're really lucky, they'll go through nine.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, you'd be happy. If you could sign a contract that said the Blue Jays are only going to use nine starters next year, yeah, I think you'd take it.
And if they're really unlucky, they'll go through 18. Right?
So, I remember that year.
Yeah, that was it. There's never 18 good starters in your system. So, yeah, they got work to do. You know, they have some work to do here. But this... Yeah, I just can't get too worked up about Steven Matz. But that's not saying you're not right. I think you're right.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. We shouldn't be having this, yes, overblown discussion about Steven Matz.
Like, it's like people fighting over a Honda Civic, right?
I drive a Honda Civic. Well, now that feels like an affront.
No, but that's a good car, right? It's a good car. It's the most popular car in the world.
That's right.
Right. It's really reliable. You know, it's good bang for your buck, but it's not a Maserati.
No.
Right? So
don't drive that.
No, but, you know, so that's it. Like, everybody was kind of willing to fight over it, but at a certain level.
Mm.
Except Matz, who took it personally.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that in just a second. But there's two offshoots from this.
Okay.
One is that this feels like a very different free agent market than a season ago when the Blue Jays, I mean, there were some teams throwing around money,
mm-hmm,
and they went toe-to-toe with the Mets for George Springer, and they outbid the Mets for his services, giving them the extra year. But it feels like there's a lot of teams with money burning holes in their pockets, and it's the Rangers and it's the Tigers and it's always the Yankees and the Dodgers now too, but maybe not. I mean, they didn't qualify Clayton Kershaw, but there's a lot of teams. It is not the same free agent market as we saw a year ago. And maybe that was, you know, some of these teams laying back, understanding that this free agent class was kind of a special one with all the shortstops out there, but it feels very different this year, Steven.
I would say it does, except here's the thing. We haven't seen the top of the market.
You're right.
Right? We haven't seen anything. So we like when Correa signs or Seager signs or Marcus Semien signs even or Robbie Ray signs or Gausman signs out of the pitchers, the remaining pitchers. Like it looks like a very vigorous middle class kind of market right now. But where's the ceiling going to be? And we may not know what the ceiling is going to be until after the lockout.
Yeah.
Like that's, we'll see. I know there's talk about Semien wanting to get a deal done before the lockout, et cetera. Yeah. But like, it's still, you know, like when we define a market, you're still kind of looking like 2 years ago and saying, okay, what did Gerrit Cole get?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And last year, really, what did Springer get?
You're right.
It appears Texas has money to burn. It appears Detroit is serious. Still kind of unsure what the Yankees are doing. But let's see what Carlos Correa gets, because that's a real mystery to me. Right. Like I keep hearing about teams that, you know, he doesn't want to play for or they don't want him. But he's the best player.
He had lunch with AJ Hinch. Did you see that? There's a picture. There's some sleuthers but AJ Hinch was just giving him a baby gift for his newborn baby.
So that's very nice.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, there's the play. Okay. So if the Detroit Tigers make that splash and go to the very top of the market and pay him what he's going to get, which is going to be a lot. Then that'll tell you where the market is right now. Like it's a funny one, right? Because again, we have this artificial deadline on December 1st. There have been some guys kind of, you know, make the quest for security seems to have been important to some players. You know, and that's not just in terms of free agency, but in terms of the extensions we've seen. But yeah, who's going to set the market?
So happy Thanksgiving to Steven Matz, who did the thing. Now he gets to eat his turkey in peace.
And think about St. Louis and all the bowling hall of fame was there, but I think they moved it.
No, is it? Well, I know the largest bowling alley is like in Reno, Nevada is where they have the World Series of bowling.
But like
they?
The Hall of Fame, like if you want to go to see like Earl Anthony's glove, it was in St. Louis.
Really?
Yeah. I went there once. I was on a road trip covering the football, I think back when they had a football team. And what are you doing an off day in St. Louis? You go to the Bowling Hall of Fame.
I would have gone to the Arch. You didn't do the Arch?
It's not much. Like
you can go in it, though.
Yeah, that's not that. It's like being in, like, have you ever been inside like the Statue of Liberty or those things? Like it's actually better on the outside.
Oh, okay.
Generally, as a rule, it's better on the outside.
Never been to St. Louis. All right, I'll look for the Bowling Hall of Fame. I'll forget the Arch.
I think it's gone. So the only look is probably it's gone somewhere else, somewhere where they appreciate
I'll
it
be
more.
Be forced into going up the Arch then. The other thing. Shai Davidi did a good job of mentioning this. It was like at the end of his story, which I think is actually, you know, something worth talking more about than just an offhand line. It was something that would jog my memory because it was announced a couple of days ago that this country will stop allowing unvaccinated professional athletes into this country because there was a special exemption.
Yes, which we kind of forgotten about, right? That, you know, during those, again, the vaccine wasn't that widespread when these leagues were starting up. We went through all the COVID stuff and the protocols and how they had to be in their bubbles and all of that stuff. But we never actually discussed, well, hang on a second. What if an unvaccinated player shows up at a time when you have to be vaccinated to get on a plane and do a million other things in this country? And now we're about to find out.
Well, and does that impact the Blue Jays' pursuit of free agents? Because this is not the National Hockey League, which has, what, a 99.9% vaccination rate. I think it's close to the NFL. I'm sure it's high. Sure, it's higher than 50%, but it's not 100%. And I'm telling you, there's some big-name free agents out there that are unvaccinated, and these are the rules now. And will they look the same in April? Who knows? But you're not about to hand – I'm not even going to say a name because I'm not going to cast aspersions at potential player X, but are you going to hand out $300 million to somebody who you're not even sure can cross the border and play in your – city this summer? Like that's an interesting element.
Well, it's pretty straightforward. They cannot sign an unvaccinated player.
Nope.
Also, you know, and again, we don't know what the numbers mean in terms of percentages because, you know, that the teams announced kind of or they some teams said, you know, kind of what their percentage of vaccinated staff was, right? It's you're never sure if it's just players or that includes coaches or the traveling staff or whatever, but you know, the Jays were very high, one of the highest, but they weren't 100.
No, you're right. That's a great point,
If there's two guys on their roster from last year who are still on their roster who are unvaccinated, don't you have to kind of move them?
And what if that's an immovable player?
That would be an interesting question.
I hadn't even thought about that one, but that's an obvious one too.
But you really do, don't you? They can't function. Like, they, you know, like I know, you know, the Nets and Kyrie Irving, we, you know, kind of seen how they've handled that one, but, you know, a 162 game baseball season, you cannot function as a Canadian team with an unvaccinated player. You just can't.
No, not at all. I think we're going to find out pretty soon whether Blue Jays have that situation or not, because yeah, that the rubber's hitting the road before the season. This exemption goes away in January. We talked the other day about, you know, what it might look like if the Blue Jays have an independent owner as opposed to a corporation, which they have right now. Could be good.
Could be good.
But perhaps one of the pitfalls is what's happening in Queens right now, Stephen, because Steve Cohen is the richest owner in Major League Baseball. There's some rich owners in Major League Baseball.
Yes.
But he's the richest.
Yes.
And that's all well and good. So he can give Francisco Lindor way too much money, especially for the production that he put up in year one of that deal. I'm sure he'll bounce back, maybe dodge a bullet dodge there from the Blue Jays, but we'll see. Or you could have this because, you know, Steven Matz was rumored to be in conversation with his former team, the Mets. Steve Cohen this morning said, "I'm not happy this morning." This is a tweet. "I've never seen such unprofessional behavior exhibited by a player's agent. I guess words and promises don't matter." Now, there was a follow-up from one of the Mets beat writers who actually was in communication with Steve Cohen, who said that it was Matt's representatives who reached out to the Mets initially, but that no promises were made, the conversations were had, and they moved on, and they got 4 years, $44 million from the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes.
This is wild. That is absolutely wild.
Well, as wild as, number one, if you end up with an individual owner, one of the things, you don't want him on Twitter. Okay, let's start with that.
Correct.
Right? So that would be a bad thing.
Says the man who's not on Twitter.
Yeah, I think so, that's exactly, no, I think it would be a sound policy not to have your owner on
who
Twitter.
Who should be on Twitter, Stephen?
Let me think about that. It's easier to think about who should not be. Yeah. But not your own. Yeah, you don't want your owner on Twitter. Number one, and you probably don't want your owner engaged in discussions with, the Honda Civic of free agents. This isn't like the Lindor deal where you're thinking, okay, this is a massive investment for our franchise for years and years and years down the road. You probably have to bring the owner in on some level on that. But on this, for Steven Matz,
for the Honda Civic?
Yeah, like why is he part of this? Clearly what happened, what it appears happened was that he believed everything at face value, it's like those things, you know, we go through every year with free agents saying, "Would you like to play in Toronto?" And they go, "Oh, I would love to play. I would be very happy to play in Toronto." You know, again, reading in the thought balloon, if they pay me, you know, $25 million more than the other guy, give me another year, or I'd play anywhere if you pay me more. pretty much. That's generally what that means, right? Yes. No one ever says, "No, I'm not going to play there," except, you know, maybe Marcus Semien or Marcus Stroman and the Yankees. But, you know, what he appears to have thought is that they were going to come back to him because Steven Matz so desired to go back and revisit the place where he was tortured.
Right.
And make it good, that after he got this offer, he was going to go back to them and say, you know, can you better it, or I'll take less to play for the Mets, or I have no idea what he really believed. But something along those lines, which, you know, if he was 9 years old, you could understand that he might believe that. Right?
Yes.
You go, "Yeah, good, didn't you? You said you were going to come back." So it's an odd thing. He just seems like the most naive guy in the world. But allowing his hurt feelings to be broadcast to the universe. He doesn't make a great case for individual ownership.
No, and I guess maybe Billy Epler was not, he's not put in a position to operate this negotiation in time for this thing, but I think
somebody,
he was.
Somebody has to,
somebody,
right?
Who's not the owner.
Yeah.
Because it's one, this is the worst case scenario with a very rich owner and somebody who is willing to put up the capital to field a winning team. But there's the horrible caveat of this, of meddling, right? There's nothing worse than the meddling owner. What you want is the owner with bottomless pockets who puts the smart people in place and then just backs up.
Yeah, and when you have a disastrous deal, like, you know, where you end up paying Prince Fielder for 6 years when he's not playing anymore or anything, just kind of goes, what the heck, it's sunk cost, right?
Yeah.
That's the guy you want.
Yeah, you don't want this. The U.S. soccer team wants what Canada got in Edmonton.
I see that. They're learning from us. Isn't that good?
So so if people didn't see, the U.S. soccer team, they're going to play their next qualifiers. They have two out of their three next matches in that January-February window at home, as opposed to Canada only has the one at home and two on the road. So they're going to play their next qualifiers in Columbus, Ohio, against El Salvador on January 27th. Then they're going to come to Hamilton, maybe, on January 30th.
We keep hearing this, though. It's the same guy. I think it's the Washington Post guy. And again, he's tapped in, who's been reporting the Hamilton thing. I've not heard that from anyone in Canada.
Mm-hmm. No, and apparently the deadline to submit the venue was Monday, so you would have figured we would have heard something, but we haven't. So somewhere, either Hamilton or Toronto, seemingly, on January 30th. And then they're going to host Honduras February 2nd in Minnesota.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable. So, yeah, like, okay.
Remember the frozen tundra stuff? Like, you know, like, I know that was Green Bay. But they used to play football in Minnesota outdoors back in the day, right before they built the Metrodome.
Yeah.
Look it up. Look it up. Like the American football. Look it up. Look what that looked like.
How much further south of Winnipeg is Minnesota?
It's about a good day's, like it's a day's drive or half a day's drive. It's a 6-7 hour drive, as I recall. But it's kind of the same. Like, no, there's no difference. Like, it's not like it's warmer because it's a little bit south of Winnipeg. It's Winnipeg. Right.
Yeah, it's Winnipeg.
It's Winnipeg. Yeah. No, it's really, really cold. And Minnesota is really, really cold. And the Columbus one is the one, that's where they put the Mexico game, right? Because there are no people of Mexican descent living in Columbus.
I'm thinking they looked up to see if there's any El Salvadorians that live in Columbus.
Yeah.
It was Cincinnati they played Mexico.
Oh, Cincinnati? Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, there's no El Salvadorians in Columbus.
This kind of feels the same, right? Where they did it's a demographic thing where they looked at the census numbers or something. But yeah, Minnesota, like Edmonton's way farther north, but I'm betting Minnesota is about the coldest place you could go.
Oh, and on February 2nd, I can guarantee you that the weather for that game will be colder than minus 10 in Edmonton that we saw. Like, they'll be laughing at minus 10. They're like, please give us minus 10.
One of these games is going to get canceled.
I can't imagine it doesn't. Like, because there is literally, you cannot go onto a field in shorts and I understand you can wear, I guess, Under Armour or whatever if it's minus 30, which is
entirely possible.
It's February in essentially Winnipeg. When is it not minus 30?
Yeah, with the breeze.
So the Americans will be, unlike the Mexicans, acclimatized to the weather as well, right? Like, they're going to play all three of their matches in the cold. So that's
true.
Like, there is no home field advantage in regards to the weather if they're playing outdoors here in Toronto or Hamilton in that middle game. They're like, that'll be a warm-up for them headed to Minnesota.
Yeah.
So there'll be no element to that.
Yeah, that does seem, anyway. I guess they're not leaving anything to chance either.
No, they're not. They're taking no chances when they're playing these warm weather teams. Coming up in January as well is the drop-dead date for the NHL to decide whether or not they are going to the Olympics, because there is still a decision that can be made. And the way it's written into the deal that they signed is whether it's impractical or unsafe to go to Beijing in February. Now, we have had a COVID outbreak that has resulted in the cancellation of games when it comes to the Ottawa Senators. Had a pretty big COVID outbreak in the New York Islanders, and Zdeno Chara, one of the more recent cases. Mm-hmm. They have yet to pause games. And all indications are that what has happened so far is not enough to throw the Olympics into chaos. And also, this is not the early days of the pandemic where it's like the COVID-19 is raging in China. The authoritarian regime, they handled COVID quite well, because they just forced people into their corners, right?
Yes, they get to do things that they allow themselves to do things that others don't. Yes,
but we know that the NHL. I mean, if you just gave them the truth serum, you don't even have to do that. You can ask them explicitly whether you'd rather go or not. They'd rather not.
Well, the owners don't want to go. Players want to go. I'll say the players who are going to play want to go, and the players who aren't going to go, they want them to go too, so they get 2 weeks off.
Yep.
Right. So they can go to the beach. So true. Like, all players are in favor of the Olympics.
Yeah.
Right?
But I wonder if this gives them, and again, what has happened so far, apparently not enough to activate this clause of impractical or unsafe. But there's a multitude of reasons, and we talked about them humanitarian-wise, as to why you might not want to bring your product to Beijing.
That's, well, let's see about that one. Like, yes, if a protest grows around these games, if there is resistance, if there is political resistance or there is athlete resistance about going to China because of the Peng Shui stuff, but also just in general, you can come up with all kinds of good reasons not to go to China. But I don't expect the NHL to lead on that one.
Well, I'm telling you, it would be quite a PR move for the NHL to say we're the ones, I mean, under the guise of we're the ones, but understanding that there's other factors involved here other than being, you know, like the Steve Simons of the WTA who have vocally spoken out against China. But you could take the lead on this. Because
do you believe that's going to happen, Ben?
Well, I wouldn't if it was like, just
it's
that.
It's like the Mets guy believing in stuff. Like, do you believe that's going to happen?
I don't know how you've done this, but I'm usually the cynical guy. But on this show, I've like been the no, opposite
no,
of that.
If you want to believe it, it's nice. It'd be a nice thing to believe that the guys in New York would go, oh, you know, listen, they're terrible people. And, you know, I know we went there before and played exhibition games, and they were terrible people then.
Yeah.
But we were happy to try and tap into their vast and, you know, their vast and growing market. Mm-hmm. But maybe that this would be the tipping point before the, I think no, but I think the one thing is look, the, yeah, could the COVID thing take a left turn somewhere? And, you know, and the end of January, we're all going, my God, mm-hmm. you know, there's an issue here. And again, I'm not saying an issue like, but you know, it doesn't have to be an issue for the world. It just has to be an issue within hockey.
Right.
Like if you had any kind of questions within the National Hockey League, within the world of hockey players mm-hmm. or something in China. Yeah. I think that they would pull the pin in that circumstance for sure. Again, because you know, like again, I'm not sure they're that anxious to go.
Yeah. That's
from an
it.
Owner point of view.
That's it. Like, yeah, you would think that they're looking for any excuse, not any, because this is, if it were just looking for any, it'd be like, hey, we already had to cancel games. Like we're not going.
Yes.
So it's obviously not any excuse, but like they're, if they get enough,
further disruption of the NHL schedule, right, which we canceled or postponed games beyond we've seen almost none. Mm-hmm. But if we got into a situation where it's that kind of cascading schedule issue, which mm-hmm. could happen, you know, yep. like, again, all you need is one team, you know, yeah. and something more serious, then I think I could see them doing it.
Did you know that Canada Hockey already has a backup team, like, assembled? They're ready to go non-NHLers. And did you know this beyond that? And this makes a ton of sense because the NHL that threw the language in there. NHL is a backup schedule. They don't need an Olympic break. They have a secondary schedule where the games are not so jammed together and, you know, they play through those 2 weeks. So it's really as easy as you pull the plug and the NHL is ready to go. Like it's a contingency. And like, you know, when I say contingency, when I first heard this, it was, you know, in quotation marks. No, this is a contingency that is, it's real. It's been planned for. They're ready to go.
Where is this ghost team? Like, where are they located? Are they in like?
I think it's just a bunch of names.
They're not somewhere.
They're not under glass or something.
No, I just thought they might be put away somewhere in a rural arena, practicing away, yeah. waiting for their big break.
You know where they are? They're in like Davos or something. It's like the Ben Scrivens of the world. You know, it's those guys. I'm sure Ben Scrivens is going to be on that team.
So instead of playing the Spengler Cup, they would just take a hard left turn and go to China?
That's right.
Okay.
Anyways, just something to keep an eye on because, yeah, we're still over a month away from that deadline, but it is upcoming. They got to make a decision by mm-hmm. January 10th. All right. When we come back, you better believe we're diving back into the Mets thing next guest.
We just, it's easy. It's too easy for him.
we'll put the ball on the tee and we'll let David Sampson hit it out of the park. He, former MLB executive, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, joins us next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.